didn't want to waste them. So they used the dumb bombs, which kill so many more.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's what they said. But then I say, if the person is you know, is not important enough for you to waste ammunition on, but you're willing to kill 15 civilians, a family?
Yuval Abraham, I wanted to read from the Israeli military statement, the IDF statement, in response to your report. They say, quote, "The process of identifying military targets in the IDF consists of various types of tools and methods, including information management tools, which are used in order to help the intelligence analysts to gather and optimally analyze the intelligence obtained from a variety of sources. Contrary to claims, the IDF does not use an artificial intelligence system that identifies terrorist operatives or tries to predict whether a person is a terrorist. Information systems are merely tools for analysts in the target identification process." Again, that's the IDF response, Yuval Abraham, to your report. Your response.
I read this response to some of the sources, and they said that they're lying, that it's not true. And I was surprised that they were, you know, usually they're not so, you know, blatant in saying something that is false. I think this can very easily be disproven because, you know, a senior ranking Israeli military official, the head of the 8200 unit AI center, gave a public lecture in last year in 2023 in Tel Aviv University. You can Google it, anybody who's listening to us, where he spoke about, quote, I'm quoting him in that lecture, an AI system that the Israeli military used in 2021 to find terrorists. That's what he said. So to have that on record, I have the presentation slides showing how the system is rating the people, and then to get a comment from the IDF spokesperson saying, we do not have a system that uses AI to... I really don't know. Like, I almost thought, do I put this in the piece or not? Because, you know, I know it not. I gave them the space in the piece to make those claims. Like, I think I tried to be as dry as possible in the way that I was reporting. But really, like, I am very, very confident in those findings. They are verified from numerous sources that I've spoken with. And I think that people who read the full investigation, read the depth of it, the commander of the 8200 unit wrote a book in 2021 titled Human Machine Teams, How Synergy Between AI and Human Beings Can Revolutionize the World. And in the book, he's talking about how militaries should rely on artificial intelligence to, quote, solve the problem of the human bottleneck in creating new targets and in the decision-making to approve new targets. And he wrote in that book, he said, and this is another quote from him, he said that no matter how many intelligence officers you have tasked with producing targets during the war, they still will not be able to produce enough targets per day. And he gives a guide in that book as to how to build these AI systems. Now, I want to emphasize, you know, he writes in the book very, very clearly that these systems are not supposed to replace human judgment. It's, he calls it, you know, a mutual learning between humans and artificial intelligence. And he says, and the IDF still maintains this. They say it is intelligence officers who look at the results and make a decision. From what I heard from numerous sources, after October 7th, that stopped being the cases, at least in some parts of the IDF, where again, Amy, as I said before, sources were told that if they check that the target is a male, they can accept Lavender's recommendations without thoroughly looking at them, without checking why the machine made the decision that it made. And I think, you know, when speaking with sources, like, just to describe, like, many of these sources, you know, they were drafted to the military after October 7th. Many of them were shocked by atrocities that happened on October 7th. Their families, their friends, some of them did not think they would be drafted to the military again. They said, okay, we have to go now. There was this sense that. And gradually, when they realized what they were being asked to do, the things that they are involved in, not, I wouldn't say that all six are like this, but at least some of them felt again, shocked by committing atrocities and by being involved in things and killing families, and they felt it's unjustifiable. And they felt a responsibility, I think. And I felt this also in the previous piece that I wrote, The Mass Assassination Factory, which spoke about another AI machine called The Gospel. They felt a need to share this information with the world out of a sense that people are not getting it. You know, they're hearing the military spokesperson and all of these narratives that we've been hearing for the past 6 months, and they do not reflect the reality on the ground. And I really believe, you know, there's a looming attack now on Rafah. These systems could be used there again to kill Palestinians in massive numbers. These attacks, and you know, it's placing the Israeli hostages in danger who are still unjustifiably held in Gaza and need to be released. There needs to be a ceasefire. It cannot go on. And I hope that this investigation that exposes things so clearly will help more people all around the world call for a ceasefire, call to release the hostages, and end the occupation and move towards a political solution. For me, there is no other way forward.
I wanted to ask if U.S. military, if U.S. technology is playing a role in Israeli AI, artificial intelligence.
So I don't know, and there is some information that I cannot fully share. Like at this moment, I'm investigating, like you know, who is involved in developing these systems. What I can tell you is, you know, based on previous experience of the 2014 war and the 2021 war, when the wars end, or these systems are then sold to militaries all over the world, and I think, regardless of you know the horrific results and consequences of these systems in Gaza, alongside that, I really think there is a danger to humanity. Like this AI-based warfare allows people to escape accountability. It allows to generate targets really on a massive, you know, thousands, 37,000 people marked for potential assassination. And it allows to do that and maintain a sort of aesthetic of international law, because you have a machine that makes you a target file with, you know, commander or like target collateral damage, but it loses all meaning. I mean, take the principle of distinction under international law. When you design a system that marks 37,000 people and you check and you know that 10% of them are actually not militants, right? They're loosely related to Hamas or they're not related at all. And you still authorize to use that system without any meaningful supervision for weeks. I mean, isn't that a breach of that principle? When you authorize to kill, you know, up to 15 or up to 20 civilians for targets that you considered, from a military point of view, not especially important. Isn't that a clear breach of the principle of proportionality? I don't know, like, I think international law really is in a crisis right now. And I think these AI-based systems are making that crisis even worse. They are draining all of these terms from meaning.
Let me play for you a clip of National Security Council spokesperson John Kirby being questioned on Tuesday about Israel's killing of 7 aid workers in 3 cars from Chef Andres' World Central Kitchen. This is Kirby.
Is firing a missile at people delivering food and killing them not a violation of international humanitarian law?
Well, Israelis have already admitted that this was a mistake that they made. They're doing an investigation. They'll get to the bottom of this. Let's not get ahead of that. The State Department has a process in place. And to date, as you and I are speaking, they have not found any incidents where the Israelis have violated international humanitarian law.
So that's the U.S. top spokesperson, John Kirby, saying Israel's never broken international law so far since October 7th. And again, this is in response to a question about the killing of the 7 aid workers, 1 Palestinian and 6 international aid workers. Can you talk about your response to this attack? 3 different missiles hitting all 3 cars, and then what Kirby said.
Yeah, wow, it's quite shocking in my mind. I mean, what he said, you know, based on the evidence that exists. The first thought that popped up to my mind when he was talking about, you know, Israel is investigating it, you know, since I know the statistics, so if you take the 2014 bombing and war in Gaza, so you know, 512 Palestinian children were killed. Israel said that it will investigate. There were like hundreds of claims for war crimes. Only one file the Israeli military actually persecuted soldier about, and it was about looting of like 1,000 shekels. Everything was closed. This happened, you know, 2018, 2019, 230 Palestinians are shot dead at the border. Again, tens of... One file prosecuted. Like, to claim that because Israel is having an investigation, it somehow means that they are getting to the bottom of this and changing something, it's just mocking our intelligence, I think. The second thing that I would say is that it's true that the state of Israel has apologized for it, but if you actually look at the track record of people being killed around aid trucks, this has happened over and over again for Palestinians. I mean, in the beginning of March, 112 Palestinians were killed around the flour aid truck. The Guardian reported at the time that 14 such cases happened, like in February and January. So it's clear to me that the Israeli military is apologizing not because of the crime, but because of the identity of the people who were killed in the crime. And I think that's really hypocrisy. And to answer the question about my findings, I mean, I don't know if artificial intelligence was involved in that strike. I don't want to say something that I'm not, you know, 100% sure of. But what I have learned from Israeli intelligence officers makes me not be surprised that this strike took place, because the firing policy is completely permissive, and we're seeing it. I mean, we're seeing, you know, unarmed civilians being bombed to death. We saw that video of four people walking and being bombed to death. We have doctors, you know, talking about how in hospitals they're seeing young children like with bullet holes. Like the Guardian investigation, who spoke to nine doctors that spoke about that. So this extreme permissiveness and is not surprising to me.
Your piece doesn't talk about drones, but Yuval, can you talk about how the AI systems interact with unmanned attack drones?
Yeah. So, you know, I said this last time, like I can't speak about everything, also because we are sort of always have to think of the military censor in Israel. As Israeli journalists, we're very much, binded by that. But the systems interact, and you know, if somebody is marked to be killed by Lavender, then that person could be killed by an warplane. They could be killed by a drone, and they could be killed by a tank that's on the ground. Like there is like this sort of policy of sharing intelligence between different units and different weapon operators. I wouldn't be surprised if, because Israel said, you know, there was a target, somebody that we suspected. Of course, the aid workers and like they completely rejected that. But like, I wouldn't be surprised if the flagging, you know, that the Israeli system received was somehow related to a faulty automated mechanism that is, you know, mass surveilling the area and picked up on something and had, you know, not the highest precision rate. From what I'm hearing from sources, this is the atmosphere. This is the case.
Investigative reporter Yuval Abraham on his latest piece for Plus972 magazine and Local Call, headlined Lavender, the AI machine directing Israel's bombing spree in Gaza. He's speaking to us from Jerusalem. When we come back, I ask Yuval about a film he co-directed, which won the prize for best documentary at the Berlinale, the Berlin Film Festival in Germany. In his acceptance speech, Yuval said Israel was guilty of apartheid. He'll talk about what happened next. Stay with us.
مش نص مسرح حكاية يكون يا روح بعدي بعدي مش من شان الجاي بعدي هي روح تزرت عيدي ميثاق غليظ أنا خميل وعدي يا روح ما عب قربي مهزوم ألسنة مفضوع عرضي وإن كان مشروع حربي من الكوز خش مال كل شي عزب بي بهتم برشين بعرضك بتخرمش تشد تفهمش تبلش تخربش تخش حد سامع شو بنحكي بتفهمش الناس شو بنحرف حتى لو كان كلام سليم بقرف العدو حكيم بس ما بتفرش حتى لو كان حكيم وكل قرار سليم بالنهاية الجواب بيختلفش لن وبلوك على أم أسأن وين انت احضر بالوصف يوم خن خانك تعبير يوم خربشت في التقدير ترخيش الشد إن أن
Nasheed by Shabashdeed and Al-Nadr. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we continue our conversation with Yuval Abraham, the Israeli investigative reporter for 972 magazine, Yuval is also the co-director of the film No Other Land, a documentary produced by a Palestinian-Israeli collective that looks at Israel's mass expulsion of Palestinians living in Musafer Yatta in the occupied West Bank. This is the trailer.
You think they'll come to our home?
Is the army down there?
1,000 Palestinians face one of the single biggest expulsion decisions since the Israeli occupation of the Palestinian territories began.
Basel, come here. Come fast.
This is a story about power. My name is Basel. I grew up in a small community called Musafer Yatta. I started to film when we started to end. They have bulldozers. I'm filming you.
I need air, oh my God.
Don't worry.
I don't want them to take our home.
You're Basel?
Yes.
You're Palestinian?
No, I'm Jewish.
He's a journalist. You're Israeli. Seriously.
We have to raise our voices, not being silent as if no human beings live here.
What? The army is here?
This is what's happening in my village now. Soldiers are everywhere.
Who do you think you're filming, you son of a whore?
It would be so nice with stability one day. Then you'll come visit me. Not always me visiting you, right?
Maybe. What do you think? If you were in my place, what would you do?
The trailer for No Other Land, co-directed by Israeli Yuval Abraham and Palestinian filmmaker Basel Adra. The film won the prize for best documentary at the Berlin Film Festival, the Berlinale in Germany. This is a part of Yuval's acceptance speech.
In 2 days, we will go back to a land where we are not equal. I'm living under a civilian law, and Basel is under military law. We live 30 minutes from one another, but I have voting rights, and Basel is not having voting rights. I'm free to move where I want in this land. Basel is, like millions of Palestinians, locked in the occupied West Bank. This situation of apartheid between us, this inequality, it has to end.
Yuval Abraham received death threats for those comments. I asked him about the film winning the top prize at the Berlinale and what happened afterwards.
So, you know, we got this award for the film, and we were very, very happy, me and Basel, after we've been filming, me and Basel and Rachel and Hamdan, they're also co-directors, and, you know, for many years. And it was like a moment of recognition, and we felt that we got the audience award, and the audiences were very moved by it. And the next day, I wanted to fly back home, and I took a connection flight in Greece, and then I opened my phone in Greece, and I see that I'm receiving like dozens of death threats for the speech. And I saw that German politicians, including the mayor of Berlin, were dubbing it as like anti-Semitism and generally the speeches. And this, I decided to stay in Athens because I was hesitant to go back. And the next day, like, a group of people came to my parents' house and threatened them. My mother was really scared from it, and she had to leave. She went to sleep with my sister in Jerusalem, and it was very, very scary. And I felt many things, but like one of the things that I felt outraged by was that you have, you know, German politicians who are not Jewish who, you know, label me as an anti-Semite for what? For calling for a ceasefire, for calling for equality between Israelis and Palestinians, for using the word apartheid, which should be common sense to describe these, you know, parallel systems of inequality. And I felt, I was thinking of my grandparents, you know, my grandmother, she was born in a concentration camp in Libya called Jado. Her father was murdered by Italy, who were working, the fascist Italy were working with the Nazis. Most of my grandfather's family in Romania were murdered by Germans. And like, who are you to label me as an anti-Semite? And I feel that, you know, this term is very dangerous because, you know, on the one hand, it's very, very clearly being weaponized to silence legitimate criticism of the state of Israel, of Israel's policies. And that's a big danger. On the other hand, for me as Israeli, as a Jewish person, you know, if you are labeling everything as anti-Semitism, you're emptying it out of meaning. And I think especially now when there is a rise in anti-Semitism and we are seeing more and more cases of anti-Semitism, you know, happening everywhere on the extreme right, on the left, like we're seeing it, for me, is even worse that Germany is emptying that term out of meaning like that. And I think that people, you know, like it's completely legitimate to label Israel as apartheid. It's completely legitimate to call for a ceasefire. And it was absurd. And it was, I hope things have changed since. I don't think they have, but, you know.
Your co-director, Palestinian Basil Adra, called for the stopping of arming of Israel.
Good evening, everybody. We're glad to be here and grateful. It's our first movie since many years. My community, my family has been filming our community being erased by this brutal occupation. I'm here celebrating the award, but also very hard for me to celebrate when there are tens of thousands of my people being slaughtered and massacred by Israel in Gaza. Masafer Yatta, my community is being also erased by Israeli bulldozers. I ask one thing for Germany, as I am in Berlin here, to respect the UN calls and stop sending weapons to Israel.
Yuval Abraham, that's your co-director. You're an Israeli-Palestinian team, Basil Adra, accepting the award for Best International Documentary. Can you talk more about what he said?
Yes, Basil called for Germany to respect UN resolutions and to stop the arming of Israel. And he spoke about, you know, the tens of thousands of Palestinians in Gaza who were killed and called for a ceasefire. And just, you know, I want to say one last thing, maybe. When I got back home to Jerusalem, I remembered, you know, when we were working on the film, me and Basil, like, Basil told me that when he was a young boy, like he would always sleep with his shoes on because he knew that the army can, you know, knock down the door at any time and arrest him and take his family. And he was so used to it as a child that he would have shoes on all the time. So he will be ready to run if soldiers enter the village. And when we were sleeping in Masafer Yatta working on the film, we would always have shoes on because the army entered and you know, took the computer from the house and confiscated equipment. And when I was my house in Jerusalem, after all of these things happening, I was thinking, you know, I don't have to sleep with shoes on. There is no chance that a foreign military is going to enter to my home and arrest me and take me. And I think, again, I felt this apartheid reality, this completely unequal reality when we're under two systems of law, where only one people in this land have sovereignty and the other people do not. And I think going forward, again, like this has to change. We cannot continue to live here like this if there is no full political equality and really full freedom to everybody who lives in this land. then there can be no future here. And we are going to continue to fight to change this. And I hope people watch our film, No Other Land, when it comes out in the States.
And the showing of your film in the occupied West Bank area of Masafer Yatta, the subject of your award-winning documentary, No Other Land, what was it like?
Yeah, so, people came, and these are people who are living, it's a community of villages, Masafer Yatta, and every week, Israeli bulldozers come, they pick a house of a family and they destroy it. And settlers constantly attack this community. Like, there's a lot of violence that is being placed on by the state to forcibly transfer this community, to erase it from the map. And I was worried, these people are coming to see, quite traumatic events that are happening to them. And what will they think? And in the end, it was a very inspiring night. This community, especially in Masafer Yatta, is so inspirational because, these are people that really, against all odds, against really colonial policies and oppression and violence, they are staying on their lands and living their lives and raising families and then going to see the film and looking at the old archive footage that we have and laughing at how they were children like 20 years ago. It was a very inspirational night. And there was a big community. There were Israeli activists and international activists and Palestinian activists and a lot of people who are united in, being completely against this occupation and this forced transfer . Yeah, we're going to have to continue to fight to make a change.
Yuval Abraham, he co-directed the film No Other Land with Palestinian activist Basil Adra, part of an Israeli-Palestinian collective. They won Best Documentary at the Berlin Film Festival, the Berlinale. He's also an investigative journalist with Plus 972 magazine and Local Call. We'll link to his latest piece, an explosive expose, headlined Lavender, the AI machine directing Israel's bombing spree in Gaza, which looks at how the Israeli military used artificial intelligence to develop a kill list in Gaza of tens of thousands of Palestinians who were targeted for assassination with little human oversight. He looks at Lavender as well as another AI program called Where's Daddy? We'll also link to Yuval Abraham's other appearances on democracynow.org. That does it for today's program. Tomorrow, on Saturday night, April 6th, I'll be speaking in Berkeley, California, at KPFA's 75th anniversary celebration. It's at the First Church of Christ Scientists, a landmark building at 2619 Dwight Way. That's April 6th at 6:30 in Berkeley, California. Tonight, I'll be speaking in Ukiah, California. Go to democracynow.org for more information. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for a digital fellowship. Learn more and apply at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Sharif Abdo-Kadous, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, and Hannah Elias. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to our director, Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Hugh Gran, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, Dennis McCormick, Matt Ely, Anna Osbeck, Emily Anderson, and Buffy St. Marie Hernandez. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hello, this is Kelly from the Peak Publication Society, SFU student-led newspaper. Recently, news organizations have been facing issues sharing news content. All news outlets, including small publications like us, have been affected due to Meta's refusal to comply with the Online News Act and compensate news companies. We have been serving our diverse student community for years and need your support to continue. If you'd like to contribute as a paid writer, illustrator, or photographer, Follow us on Instagram at thepeak@sfu. Keep reading our stories at the-peak.ca. If Meta is listening, we're just a community promoting SFU events. Please don't block us again.